everybody, and welcome back to Don't Quit Your Day Job. My name is Paul. Today, from Kentucky, I think, I have someone who I met a few weeks ago at a show, and I'm super stoked to have him on. His name is Eric McMeyer-Mick, which, as he just said before we started, looks shitty on a poster. So he goes by Eric McM. Eric, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Paul.
So we played a show together. I had no idea who you are. We were at the West Side Bowl in Ohio. The owner just said, hey, we got this touring guy coming through. Great. Let's have him on. And then you went up there and you played accordion and sang in some of the strangest voices I've ever heard in my life. And that's not that's not a bad thing, right? That was a good thing. But how many does it happen often that people are captivated by what you're doing, having never heard of you, and they're just like, holy shit, the accordion sounds cool. I thought it was super lame.
yeah, for sure. That's, I mean, it's kind of one of my primary objectives, right? Is to kind of turn heads and confront people with something they did not expect to see tonight, you know?
Yeah. So if I was to say to a friend, hey, this dude plays accordion and sings, let's go to the show tonight, I think most of the time they're going to say, what? No, I don't want to go see that. So how are you selling yourself? So we'll talk about the band a little bit, because that's different. But how are you selling yourself as a guy that sings and plays accordion?
It can be tricky. It's mostly about finding the right bills, okay, you know, and finding like the weird, cool bands to play with, yeah. Like yourselves. Yeah. And that was super fortuitous. Like, that was just the venue that brought us together, right. You know, it was kind of random.
Right.
And like, it's really rare that happens like that, but it's like pure fucking magic sometimes.
Right.
Do we swear on the show?
You can swear. It's okay. Oh. Yeah. Oh, and there's a kitty on your lap. So that's great.
That is Sluggerax the Destroyer.
Nice. Nice. Excellent. So when I guess the follow-up question here, is there difficulty in pitching yourself to venues? Are you finding, let's give Eric a shot?
Yeah, man, it is tricky. 'Cause like sometimes people really get off on and embrace the novelty, mm-hmm, and sometimes they don't get it. They don't want any part of it. But a lot of times the skeptical people, if you can like get in front of them and do your thing, mm-hmm, like you can change a mind or two. But the branding and the marketing end of things is really difficult, like, mm-hmm, to try and convince, right, somebody to come see this show that isn't what they're expecting or would normally want to go see, right, or, let alone like, you know, listen to this record on the internet of this weird shit from Kentucky. Like that's a constant uphill battle.
Right. So that begs the question, why? Right. So what are you?
I ask myself that every day.
What was the initial objective? Again, I definitely want to talk about Caravan Discordia, which is sort of your full band project. And that's different though. And right now I just want to focus on what you're doing as a solo performer. Yeah. And if you definitely, at least in my experience, you'll definitely get people that think this was amazing, right? This was really, truly something different and something really fun and well performed versus just a novelty, right? You see a novelty, I don't really want to see a novelty anymore, right? This is you performing actual music. But
that's something I'm always trying to be really conscious of, right, too, because the accordion can very easily, right, be nothing but shtick, you know, and I see it used that way a lot. It's a very conscious effort to be like, no, this is what draws you in, and makes you realize it's going to be different. And then trying to make it a full experience.
Right.
You know?
And with regards to that why question, it's really about if it is a struggle, right? If you have to sort of convince people right from the outset, here, give me a chance on this bill. Versus me being at a punk band, I can just say, hey, I'm a punk band, we have a trumpet, and people have an idea in their head, even though 99% of the time it's ska, and we have to tell them we're not a ska band. But that's easy. That's an easy battle. Versus you, again, that why question is it always worth it, I guess?
Another question I ask myself every day. It really is. I first picked up the accordion right around the time I was dropping out of college and like realizing that art and performance was the direction I wanted to take my life. And I was just so sick and tired of being another college dude with a ponytail and an acoustic guitar at the coffee shop open mic. And it was beyond just like wanting to stand out from the crowd and get noticed. It was just, I was so bored of it. Mm-hmm. And so bored, like I ran an open mic for about a year when I was 20. And I just got so sick of seeing the same dudes doing the same tunes the same way. And like, it was like really wanted to figure out an interesting way to kind of push the envelope. And, that motivation has kind of always been with me. So it is important to me. It's kind of core. I make my living in, you know, the quote unquote industry, as it were. Mm-hmm. When I'm not playing music, I'm a full-time sound engineer. And it's just, you know, I've seen enough of the industry and I've been in it for long enough that like, I know how I could make a living, right. at least a much more comfortable living.
Yeah.
But, it's antithetical to the why, right? Which is why has always been super important to me and not just what.
Part of that battle must be, hey, I'm not doing Weird Al songs, right? Is that also something that people think about immediately, right?
I get Weird Al questions a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of it too is, because I also get They Might Be Giants a lot.
Okay.
Which makes absolutely no sense, like if you listen to what I'm doing. And but a lot of people have very little frame of reference for an accordion. So they immediately go to the thing they can latch onto. But like I love They Might Be Giants. I love Weird Al. I was a total Weird Al kid growing up. And he was obviously my first exposure to the accordion. He's not the reason I started playing it though. And it is, I know I get that comparison a lot, but I don't feel like I get a lot of like expectation to do that shtick.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. And then one more why question here, since I'm hammering you with the why questions, why not play something cooler, right? Why not play the cello or the French horn or anything that has some cool points versus the accordion?
Because I'm not cool, man. I'm a fucking dork.
It seems hard to play too. That's the other thing, right? It seems like there's real effort there.
Oh, it is. It's a constant work in progress. I'm not self-taught as a musician, but I'm self-taught on the accordion. Mm-hmm. And man, I'm still figuring it out, you know? After a lot of years, because I spent the majority of, pretty much all my 20s and well into my early 30s, playing with a band that me and some friends started in our 20s, and then, you know, have a couple good shows open for a couple good bands, mm-hmm. you end up on the road, and we did that for years.
And it
being in the context of that band was all that really mattered. So I never really learned to play the accordion properly. I started learning and then we started the band. And so I knew all of my parts, but I couldn't really play the accordion. So when that band, finally called it quits in 19, I realized I had to actually learn how to play the fucking thing. It's I'm still learning. I'm also on tour now. I mean, not right this minute, but quite a bit this year with a band called Carry Nation and the Speakeasy.
Okay.
Based out of Wichita, Kansas. And I've been friends with those guys for a decade or more. And they were going through some lineup changes, and they're pretty decentralized now. They've got members all over the place. Okay. And they called me up last fall and asked me if I'd want to, you know, join up and learn the tunes and go on tour. Hell yeah, man. Like, I've never been on a tour before where I wasn't doing all the booking and the management and the money and
right.
just get to show up and play. But at the same time, like, it was probably the biggest musical challenge of my life, because like, it was way outside my comfort zone. I really had to approach the accordion like an accordion for the first time. And so I think I've learned more in the last 4 months with those guys than I have in that period in my entire life.
And you were just on tour with them, which again was how we met, because you were doing some solo dates sort of around that. Is that just a way for you to continue to play and maybe make a little bit of extra money on the side while you're out on the road?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I did like a run of solo dates out to Kansas to meet up with them. And then we toured up through New England, bounced around. I did a few solo dates on the way back home.
Okay.
And it worked out that way for this tour. But that's, you know, if you're going to do this shit on an independent level, you got to be flexible.
Right. Switching gears here slightly, your album Caravan Discordia, which you released last year, which is sort of centered around what you're doing. I know that you wrote a lot of songs, but there's a lot of interplay between some of the more traditional sort of folky elements, I might say. But my starting question here is what you're doing with your voice and the songwriting and the overall vibe of the albums, is this informed by Kentucky in any way or the South? I wouldn't really call Kentucky the South. I guess I wouldn't, being a Northerner, but I don't know.
Most Northerners consider it the South.
Yeah.
Most Southerners consider it the Midwest.
Yeah. Kentucky to me isn't the South in the same way that Alabama and those places are, because it's Absolutely. The Appalachians, right? It's the mountains. But anyways, is what you're doing informed by Kentucky or that sort of Appalachian feel?
I mean, I guess not directly, in so much as that I've lived in Kentucky my whole life. And so there are some intrinsic, deep influences, but, I grew up actually in Northern Kentucky, which is basically the suburbs of Cincinnati.
Okay. Right.
And it is culturally entirely Ohio. And then I came down to Central Kentucky in Lexington, where I still live now, to go to college when I was 18, fucking 19 years ago. and I did really fall in love with the Appalachian culture down here. And that's, you know, so many of the people that I consider my family and my friends nowadays, that's, you know, that's the world that they come from and that we live in now. But musically, like, I don't know, I'm a child of the first generation internet, and as such, I'm rather decentralized in that, influences from all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Southern Gothic, Nightmare Circus, Doom Punk. These are all words, various words used to describe Dark Cabaret. I also read.
Man, branding's hard.
But it definitely, like your solo stuff and as well as the Caravan Discordia stuff, it all definitely sounds like here's a horror movie circus happening, and this is what the soundtrack sounds like, right? People are definitely going to die in this movie, and here's the soundtrack to that. And some of it comes from that off-kilter feel that the accordion can give you, that sort of rolling, uneasy vibe, but a lot of it comes from your use of your voice. And you did this with the solo performance that I saw. I don't like talking to you and hearing you talk between songs. You don't sound anything like those voices that come out of you. So what's happening there? Where is that shit coming from?
Honestly, like it started like when I was a teenager, like very first, like playing in bands and stuff, bandmates and friends just always were like, you don't need to sing, you know, like, you should probably just not sing. Cause I was trying to sing all these like punk songs and pop songs, like in those registers mm-hmm. and like, I can't hit it and I'm out of tune and it sounds fucking terrible. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older and a friend turned me on to Tom Waits.
Okay.
And that was like the major turning point. I was like, oh, you can do that with your voice and you can sing that way. That really just opened me up to a lot of different worlds.
Okay.
And like, obviously he's a primary influence, but right. I draw a lot too from, I don't know, I'm a bit of a Broadway nerd and the mm-hmm. kind of the show tune-y vibes too. Right. I like the clean sweeping baritone stuff.
Yeah. When you're writing the songs, are you writing them on the accordion or are you choosing something easier, piano, guitar, whatever?
I primarily write on guitar. Mm-hmm. And about half the time I'll go, oh, that's probably an accordion song. And then I'll move it to the accordion and finish mm-hmm. it there. There are a handful of tunes in the last few years that I've written on accordion first.
Right.
It's like I said, I'm still very much learning.
And, right.
More and more, I hope to be able to do that and have it come more naturally.
For Caravan Discordia, there are certainly some songs on there that I think are accessible to people. And I want to talk about those. There are some weird things that are people are just going to be like, yeah, I don't know what's happening here. It's too weird for me. But something like Moonsong in particular, it's a beautiful song, with the female vocal. I actually neglected to write down in my notes here, the singer songwriter on that one, but how do you,
That's my wife, Katie.
Oh, okay, that's your wife.
She does primarily backup vocals in the band. She mm-hmm. co-wrote a couple tunes with me, and that one's all her.
So that is truly a beautiful song. And when you're sequencing a record like Caravan Discordia with some of those movie bits or radio bits or however you're doing it, the voice parts, are you thinking about, okay, here's a cohesive piece of music, or here's a song, here's a song, here's a song. Okay, now I can make them flow this way.
So there's kind of like a pseudo narrative thread for me that kind of ties it all together. And that's not to say that like it's a concept record or a concept band, mm-hmm. but there's definitely sort of a loose mythology.
Okay.
And I think that just kind of gives me a framework for things like sequencing.
Okay.
To, you know, kind of introduce this character and their themes here and right. then sort of temper that with a different sort of flavor. And when Katie brought me Moonsong, it was just really clear for me how that fit into the sort of ephemeral mm-hmm. Framework of the whole thing.
The initial song, O Discordia, I feel like that sort of sets the table for what's happening for the rest of the record. Was that, again, is that like the soup setting up the meal for what's happening?
Yeah, as far as the sequencing goes, for sure. And that's like, you know, that's kind of the theme song of the band, mm-hmm. as it were now. 'Cause it does kind of introduce a lot of the concepts and themes, and a lot of the characters make little minor sort
right.
of appearances in, you know, in that sort of abstract songwriting way where it's like, what do you fucking mean characters? What are you talking about? There's no names in that song. But that was, I don't know, most of the time when I write, like I'll write a progression or a riff or a melody and I'll sit on it for a month or 2 months and then I'll, you know, have another progression. Oh, those fit together. And like really long, meticulous songwriting process. And that was one that just sort of spilled out of me in a couple of hours. and it just sort of felt right to capture the vibe of the whole project. Mm-hmm. It was also right when I was starting this project.
Okay. Then a song like Fable, which is might be the longest song on the record. And for me personally, it might be my favorite song. There's a lot of different moods happening in that piece of music. So again, when you're doing something like that, I'm really interested in how you're piecing what feels complex to me as a punk rock songwriter. So a song like Fable, I don't understand where that comes from. So maybe you can't even explain where something like that comes from, but it's such an interesting piece of music.
Well, it's, again, just like any of us, just sort of like a conglomeration of influences, right? And that was one where I really tried to, you know, everything but the kitchen sink. All the things I think are cool, let's squeeze them into one song. And so it's got kind of that sort of whimsical show tune-y vibe, mm-hmm. and then it's got the sort of circus rock vibe, mm-hmm. And then sort of the sweeping epic kind of classical is not right, but almost sort of like choral type of bridge. And a lot of that honestly comes from like the idea to like mash shit like that together. Is one of my favorite bands in the world is Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum. And like one of the most, and you want to talk about complex rock music, like, oh my God. But like one of the things that really grabbed me about them when I was young was like their ability to sound like they all decided to start playing a different song, mm-hmm. like every 16 bars, mm-hmm. but have it still, it's still cohesive,
right.
And a piece of music that all makes sense within its own context. And yeah, I like giving an audience or the listener something to hold on to and then taking it away and right. making sure that they're never quite too comfortable and expecting what's going to be around the next corner.
There is something about like a melody that a listener can latch onto, but you don't repeat it ad nauseum, right? You don't repeat it so mm-hmm. much that the listener gets used to it or tired of it, right? So here's a snippet of something really cool, and now I'm going to change it into something completely different. And I think a song like Fable does some of that stuff really well. So well done, I guess. So again, your objective here in trying to convert a person at a time, I think you did that with myself and another band member in particular, Treetop. I'll give him a shout out, our trumpet player. You know, he really immediately latched onto everything that you're doing. But that's...
He was very sweet. We got to talk after the show for a little while. Yeah, I liked him a lot.
Yeah, he's a great, great guy and a great musician. But it's difficult to convert one at a time, right? So, or I guess it's not impossible. If you're playing a show every day, you'll convert 350 some odd people a year. But what's the objective here? Do you have some sort of success measurement objective when you think about what you're doing?
Success to me is converting one person at a time. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, that's easy. Like if we can sit down and engage face to face, even, you know, if I'm on a stage and you're on the floor, like I'm not playing big fucking theaters or stadiums or anything. Right. We're going to hang out afterwards. Right. Let's talk about it. And being able to engage with people on that level and maybe expand their musical horizons a little bit and maybe change what they think a band can be or a rock act can be. Mm-hmm. And you know, not like changing people's minds overnight, giving them epiphanies, just, you know,
right.
opening eyes here and they're going, oh, you know, oh, I never thought about it that way. That's pretty cool. That's success to me. And the difficult part is just keeping the bills paid enough to be able to continue to do that full time, you know? Cause it's that connection that means so much to me, and connections like this one that we've made doing this and playing a show together and meeting other artists and getting to exchange ideas and influences. And like, I think it's the coolest fucking thing in the world. And that's success to me. But at the same time, you got to pay the fucking bills, right, or right. You can't go out there and do it.
In terms of that real side of paying bills and being a responsible adult, is it better to have the day job that pays the bills so that you can do the hobby stuff? Or is it better to truly be able to express yourself and devote your time to your craft and struggle to pay the bills, you know, because those are the two ends of the spectrum. I know that there's a lot of middle ground, but most people end up having to choose one or the other.
Absolutely. And man, honestly, I think there isn't a best way to do it. I think it's entirely individual. I know artists who have 40-hour-a-week jobs and are still full-time artists. Mm-hmm. And that works really well for them. I also know that if I'm going to the same place and doing the same thing every day, I get hyper depressed. Okay. and I can't do anything else, you know. I can keep the grind going just fine,
right,
but I'm totally uninspired, and I can't also do art. It kind of has to be all or nothing for me most of the time. And it, you know, balances change as we get older too.
Sure.
And tolerances change. But for me, honestly, that's almost made it easier to keep my feet to the fire on doing art full time.
Right. When I was on stage at that show, I shouted out to you that it was the best song about gonorrhea that I had ever heard that you played that night. Of course it's funny and it's a little bit silly, but the song is still good, right? So again, another why question here, because you're going to get a response to that song, right? I think
absolutely
people are going to respond because they're going to remember it. So is that the point? I mean, you can't honestly, maybe you can. Can you honestly be expressing some deep thoughts about gonorrhea? I'm not sure. You tell me, Eric.
First of all, I got to say, it's not my song. That's a cover of a band from the UK called the Tiger Lilies.
Okay.
Who are absolutely prolific at writing amazingly beautiful music. Like, this guy is a trained opera singer who does everything in falsetto.
Okay.
He plays the accordion and the piano, and then there's an upright bass player and a percussionist. I wouldn't even say drummer. He's just sort of orchestral percussion. Amazing, gorgeous music about the most horrendously awful, dark shit. And sometimes it's hilarious.
Right.
And sometimes it's, you know, the kind of thing where, oh my God, I shouldn't be laughing at this, but it's funny. Yeah. But it's such a hard line to ride in art to be able to do something like that while still really respecting the human quality of it. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, these are things that real people really deal with and they're really horrible. I love the Tiger Lilies anyway. But like with a song like that, like, I think the measure for me of success for anyone's art is whether or not it moves people to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what art is for. It's to create feelings in other human beings, and communicate emotions in ways that we can't necessarily in verbal conversation.
Right.
And that song is particularly well suited for that, mm-hmm, because it, you know, just starts with me just screaming at about the highest note I can. And you know, I do that in a bar and everybody shuts up and turns their head.
Exactly right.
To see what the hell's going on. And then it's this horrific song with these beautiful melodies. And,
yeah, pretty
it's gross and it's funny and it's
memorable for sure. Yeah. Yes. Extremely memorable. One last thing here, Eric, before I let you go. When you were younger, when you were first starting out, did you, like a lot of punk rock guys like me or guys that came up in the 80s, you know, watching MTV and all that, we wanted the big record contract and we wanted the Lamborghini and the fast cars and, you know, totally. all of the stuff that goes along with what you think success is. And that goes away. Like you said, it goes away as you get older, priority shift. You still want to do music, but the reasons why change, right? But something in the back of at least my head always says, well, maybe this record is going to be the break. Maybe this record mm-hmm. is the one that's going to be on the soundtrack or whatever. And I am going to achieve my dreams of being a rock star at 56, right? The likelihood is not there, but it's still in the back of your head. You don't strike me as the kind of guy that had those sorts of motivations when you were younger. Dissuade me of that, my prejudice here.
I mean, that was certainly there, right? Mm. Like when I was like middle school, high school, like I got really into The Who. It was one of the first like big rock things that I really latched onto. And of course I had the dreams of playing the stadiums and the big stacks and in all of it. But the things like the fame and fortune and all that have never really appealed to me. Like, I love my Prius. And I think if I got the $10 million contract tomorrow, I would just get a newer Prius. but that said, you know, if somebody put a $10 million contract in front of me tomorrow and said, hey, we're not going to change anything about you doing what you want to do the way you want to do it. We're just going to get it out there in front of more people, which of course is always the story that they tell everybody how it actually goes. But, you know, if that legitimately came across the table, I'd jump on it. Absolutely. Yeah. In a heartbeat. Because it's hard to pay the bills.
Right.
But like at the same time too, like it's great playing in front of big crowds. I've been lucky enough to do it a handful of times in my career. There's nothing in the world like that, but at the same time, there's nothing in the world like playing for a crowd of 30 in a bar in Nebraska and doing something nobody's ever seen before and them just loving it, man. Yeah. Like there's, you know,
yeah,
that's, I think they both have their merits.
Super, super cool. Well, I want to thank everyone who's listening and supporting the podcast. It is very much appreciated, as always. Thanks to Eric McMyermick. You should definitely go and check out Caravan Discordia. Again, approach with caution. Throw out all of your notions about Weird Al and They Might Be Giants, and just listen to it, and there might be something cool in there for you. Thanks, Eric, for being on the show. Very much appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Paul.